So we have some new faces tonight and some long lost faces that are very wonderful to see. Let's do introductions around.
Ellie.
Britt.
Annie.
Sean.
Forrest.
Randy.
Julian.
Kutsu.
Donald Ann.
Wendy.
Dan.
Rod.
And Angie. Well, you two, it's wonderful to see. And how did you hear about us, Annie and Sean? It's all your fault.
I went to a day-long meditation at Insight Meditation Center in Rapid City and had an interview with Gil, and he strongly recommended that I come.
Ah.
Pretty good.
Well, I'm happy about that. He's an old friend of mine, and we've been sitting together for years. We're in the middle of, we're about a third of the way through this commentary by Musong on Trust in Mind, which is a very ancient poem by the fourth ancestor in China. It goes in very short sentences, short and pithy sentences in a kind of spiral. And so we've just been sort of walking slowly through it in this spiral. It comes back on itself and then goes off again and then comes back on itself. Like everything in Zen, it's pointing somewhere that really can't be quite said. So our job is to look where it's pointing and not try to pin the words down and make them mean something that they can't. It's why mostly we sit when we come here. We do a little talking, a little reading sometimes, but most of the time we're sitting and opening ourselves to where we are and who we are right now. So I'm always a little dubious when I pick up a book after Zazen and I think, But on the other hand, it's always helped me very much to have some words to follow along by. And so I mean, we've done this one about three times, maybe? Yeah, at least. We keep coming back to it. So I know that most of you haven't got the book and haven't read it, so I just read it along as we go. And we are now yes.
We can bring the light over.
I think I'm fine. Thanks, Dan. I think I'm... I can't focus very well, but I think I have enough light. So we talked about this a little bit last week, the one that I've numbered, number 26, when no discriminating thoughts arise, the old mind ceases to exist. The old mind, meaning the judgmental mind, the one that always leaps to have an excuse or a definition or some kind of special personal meaning for what's happening, often usually way off the mark. The emphasis here is to notice how your mind is working and be so aware that you don't get caught by your own prejudices, your own judgments. We're always so eager to say, I like this, I don't like that. I want this, I don't want that. Give me, take it away. And in the course of that, we're just clouding up the whole situation. We can't quite see it anymore. There is a way to see it. Just to be it. Be the situation that you're in. And then maybe later on you can decide, oh, this is, you know, I know what to do now because I see it. But clarity comes first. Otherwise, we just live in a cloud of confusion. So, what Mussong says is to abandon the socially constructed self, so that we're free to, he says, inhabit nature. Of course, we're inhabiting nature all the time. We are nature, wherever we are. But often we're not aware of it at all. This is mostly aimed at monastic practice, where it's much more simple kind of life, essentially. But it's a good study for us to see how, although we're not free to completely inhabit nature in these terms, we have to wear different kinds of hats. We have to fill different social roles. None of us is just one role. We put on different hats and different states of mind as we go through our life. But even so, it's very important to study what it is to let go of the judgmental mind, even as we put on and take off our roles all through the day. In other words, we can see through so that we're not tied up, mistakenly tied up, and identify ourselves with what our role is. We can do as much as we need to do and as with as much of a will as we can, and then go on, and then go on, and then go on. So that old mind of clinging back to what happened before and who I was before is what he's talking about. The old mind ceases to exist without discrimination. But of course it rises up and we see it and then we let it go. It's not one big gesture, an overall picture where we all wave a magic wand and everything becomes one. Just step by step. This time. Just this one. So he goes on. When thought objects vanish, the thinking subject vanishes. As when the mind vanishes, objects vanish. So it's saying the same thing. And he's going now into what is called the Abhidharma, which is the Buddhist study of how the mind works. and it's beginning to look at our biggest challenge, which is self-other. Our experience as a self, as somebody, and then everything else. How does this happen? How can it be? So he's saying without a object thinking, thought object, he calls it, and thinking subject. We're the thinking, we're the thinkers. And we think everything. We think each other. I had lunch with a friend today, and we were talking about this. He said, I feel so alone. And I said, but you're in my mind. He said, oh, and you're in my mind. Oh, that's very nice. We're all in each other's minds. But if we take it as a thing, and we've talked about this before, about the distinction that Martin Buber made between the self that considers everything else to be a thing, including all the people, and the self that says thou to each meeting. Meeting with people or dogs or motorcycles or stars. In other words, if the self sees Buddha in each meeting, then that self itself becomes not a thing. Isn't a thing. It isn't anyway. It's all Buddha. But the experience is radically different. The kind of mind of meeting is very, very different. So he said, things are objects because of the mind, because of the subject. And the mind is like it is. The mind, the subject, is such because of things, the object. So that has many levels, really. You can go into it deeply. Our mind has been deeply affected by where we are and who we're with. But it's even more deeply affected by the intention with which we carry ourselves, and the kind of way that we consider this life that carries us. We can take it very personally and build up a tremendous amount of protection around it. Or we can begin to, especially in Zazen, that's why sitting meditation is so precious. Because as we slow down and we're not distracting ourselves in any way, we begin to see how we're manufacturing stories, how we're creating a kind of dream life on our life. So he's he talks about language and how this is Musang who talks about language in terms of this one statement that our language is always splitting. There's so many. I knew an old lady once, and she was entering her dotage and wasn't quite there yet. She wrote down spent days doing it, writing down all the opposites that she could think of. She was a wonderful poet and fascinated by language and was very skillful in using it. And she became obsessed with black, white, up, down, in, out, good, bad. She just filled notebook pages full of these words. There's a real mystery in that. That's how our mind works. It's one way that our mind works. It's what we call the Vijna way, the way that separates and splits up and defines everything that we meet. And she was, I think, getting a taste of what Prajna mind is, wisdom mind, which sees both sides, which is how our practice works also. In Zen, if someone brings up one side, it's really important to bring up the other side, whether it's with somebody else or with oneself. There's never one side. There are never two sides either, really. But really knowing how our mind works is very, very helpful and important. So language creating duality means that it's well to pay close attention to how we use our language with our self-talk as well as talking to others. So I think that's as much as I'm going to do tonight. Because I hope there are questions and discussion. Dan?
It seems most of the time we put ourselves at the center of the universe. You know, we're you know, like in the old days with the astronomy, right? We thought the Earth was the center, right? And it's like because we think we're the center, that it's kind of like 90% me and 10% all of the other stuff out there. Mm. And first of all, there's the split, but then there's also this overemphasis on this little piece. And what I've been finding lately is that if I just reverse the percentages and pay attention to the fact that it's at most 10% me and a lot more of everything else. And that, you know, I'm part of a bigger thing that I'm really not separate from. And by reversing kind of in my head, it's just a skillful means for me to see, you know, I'm not living life. Life is also living me. And by reversing that, I can make this little piece a little smaller and see the big picture. And it's so actually wonderful to be able to do that in so many ways. You know, we always use in this group the highway, right?
Yeah.
If you realize that you're one little car, you are part of the traffic, but there are thousands of cars on the road with you, and to think that you're the center is pretty obnoxious. You're driving with thousands of other people. Best to pay attention to them, too.
That's absolutely true. On the other hand, it's also true that you're it. So if you get small enough to become all of it, then it's flipped again. So in Zen, we say not one, not two. Because if you say it one way, it's not quite there. And if you say it the other way, it's not there either. You can't come down on it. We just have to live it and be lived by it. as we go. But that kind of skillful means of working with the idea of it is very helpful. That's using language to see through it in a way. Yeah. Thank you.
Why does he say old mind? Does that mean after figuring it out, there's a new mind? Or was it just the same mind to begin with?
Well, that's a very interesting question.
Kind of splitting the
words. Well, it's language again, and he does say old mind, doesn't he? So, what do you think?
Well, I don't know what word he, you know, it's been translated, but that's one thing, so maybe if I knew what word he wrote it in Chinese.
Yes, what Chinese word he used.
I don't know. He used for old. It might have been something like original or something like that. We talked about that.
Yes, that's right.
But then he's saying we lose the old minds.
It's sort of like Dogen saying body and mind fall off.
Yeah. Maybe that's all he means. He means like that what? Not so much that maybe not exactly mind, yes, mind, but old way of looking at things, which I could be the same as mind, just because our mind is kind of a whole attitude too.
Yes.
What's going on? Maybe that's what he would mean. Just lose the old way of looking at things. I guess that's the best I can do.
It does solidify the idea of mind, doesn't it? If it can get old or young. Julian?
Like the conditioned mind as well. Like,
yeah.
In order for us to form judgments, we have to have some kind of past experience of, you know, what that's arrived to. The question I kind of have is, I mean, is he talking about getting rid of old mind altogether? I don't know. There's some value. And the way I see old minds, I mean, I think it even goes beyond just us. I mean, we're talking about people that have come before us, you know, like tradition, and some of it good, some of it bad, but it's...
Yeah. He's talking about the judgmental mind. So... Basically, behind that is our greed, hatred, and delusion. Those are the sort of basis of our judgmental mind, are these things that hang us up so much because we're so blind to them, blind to how we function as greed-driven, anger-driven, and ignorant, blundering-driven beings without any self-knowledge of how we function. So, of course, we have to know the difference between the red light and the green light and make the right decision. We make many, many very careful discriminations about things. But if we're going through life deciding on the basis of our conditioning of greed, hatred, and delusion, which is mostly what we do. I like that person because he said one thing 5 years ago that I didn't like, or I did like, or you know, the kinds of judgments that we make based on almost nothing gives us a kind of dream life that's far from the truth of things. And that's what he's talking about. If we stop discriminating as we go, being careful how we go through the world, but not passing judgment on everything.
In the precepts, there's the beginnings, greed.
Yes, hatred.
So,
and
maybe that's where the old
mind
comes in. It has nothing.
Yeah. And it's talking about the mind. You remember that story about Hakulin Zenji and the baby? In the village when the girl got pregnant by the fisherman and her parents were upset and she blamed it on Hakuin, the priest, up in the little temple in the town. And so the parents got very upset and they picked up the baby and took him up and said, okay, here, it's your baby, you raise it. And Hakuin said, oh, is that so? And he took the baby and he raised it for a few years until the girl couldn't stand it any longer and she confessed. And her parents said, oh, and they went right up there and took the child and took it away. They said, no, it's not really yours. And he said, oh, is that so? But he went with the situation in order for, if he had really objected, it would have been a mess. And so he worked with it. And that's what this is talking about also. How we meet a situation without creating, I don't know what to call it, disaffection. Forrest?
When you asked that, it reminded me of Dan's thing about skillful means in Zen. It's kind of funny to call them Zen masters, but they always have very skillful means of language, you know, and it reminded me of Suzuki Roshi's book, Big Mind, Little Mind. That's what I thought of when I heard Old Mind. It was like the little mind that Suzuki Roshi talks about, and just the way of saying it to kind of make people think of it a certain way, how with the old and with the new sort of thing.
Yeah.
Little mind. Yeah, I really like Suzuki Roshi's way of putting it, you know, the little mind and the big mind. Because you need both. You need the little mind. You need the big mind.
Yes.
But you want to have both. You can't just have. You don't want to be stuck with your little mind or your old mind or your old mind.
Impossible. Yeah.
That's kind of what I thought. I don't know if that helps. It probably is a translation thing. I would be interested to see what that word is, you know, especially in Chinese and Japanese, these words get translated. You look at the definition, there's like 3 or 4 or 5 different definitions that it could be. And the translators have to pick one. But it might be original, it could be ancient, it could be decrepit.
I think I have the original Chinese at home. There's some folks tried to work with this years and years ago at Haiku Zendo. And I think I have those papers still. I'll look it up and see what that word is. But it's just a word.
I like the discriminating mind or small mind because, you know, the last few days I've really been suffering because just put it that way. So it's kind of nice to, well, helpful. To be reminded, you know, I have a choice, you know, even though I almost got a ticket, even though something might have happened with my mother, I can control how I react to that.
Yep.
I don't have to say, oh, you know, it's because of them, you know.
Yeah.
They did it. You know, I can just say, well, that's the way it was, and if you don't, you can't, I think it's very difficult not to react to it, but at least show some self-restraint to the point where it doesn't kind of ruin your day, or ruin your life, or your week, or just kind of put a little, oh, okay, maybe that was just my mind.
It's true. It happened to me on Sunday. I was sitting with some friends at an open window, looking out in the garden and at the parking lot where my car was parked. And we watched as this kid backed his car out right into my car with a big crunch. It was just as you say, I could have, you know, gotten hysterical, my car. But it was so smooth. It just happened. And we just sat there saying, oh, that's interesting. And then the boy got up, and then his mother came, and then we talked about it, and she was going to be hysterical, and because nobody else was, she was fine. And I thought later, if we had gotten really emotional, it would have been bad for the boy and certainly for her. So I know exactly what you mean. It makes a difference. Forrest, you had something?
I was just going to share an experience I had when I used to wait tables, and at the time I was staying at Energy Koji, and so I was, I guess what we call, practicing really hard. And I got a bad tip, and I just happened to be paying attention to what was going on, and I looked at the thing, and it's like, oh man, I got this terrible tip. And I realized at the time I had this like really amazing experience, because I realized like from the moment before I got the bad tip to the moment after I got the bad tip, because I was paying really close attention to what was happening, nothing changed. Nothing was different. There was no change at all. And it was like this huge relief for me for some reason, you know, just that paying close attention and realizing like something that normally would, you know, I wouldn't, it wasn't in the world, but I would have at least gotten a little, you know, upset about it, at least a little bit. But I really was really looking closely at it, and it's like, well, that's great. That's what a relief. You know, nothing, just to have the freedom. So, that's the thing about this practice. You know, if you find yourself paying really close attention, you find things like that out. That,
yeah.
Really kind of open your eye to
what's
really happening. Which may not be as dramatic as people think.
It usually isn't. No, thank goodness it's not.
Just say, oh, thank you for this wonderful, generous tip.
Go back and give them the 5 cents change.
I gave you some change. I've been a leader too. Generous tip. Thank you.
Andy?
I think sometimes I fall into the trap of, you started by saying in the book that it's about where he's trying to get us to look. I like the analogy, the finger pointing to the moon.
Right? Yeah.
Typical, in the old mind, and my typical response, my typical Randy mind reaction to the world. Mm-hmm. I used to hear people, they would use the phrase, my old ways, my old thoughts. I said, well, they're not old if you're still using them. But I've also fallen into the trap before of pretending. Like, I love to read this kind of literature. I guess there's probably a lot of us here that do. But then I fall into the trap of trying to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
With the old mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's old mind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to implement it through effort. And I'm calling in. Right?
Except I think it has, unconsciously, I think it's working us at the same time. If we don't get,
our only hope, isn't it?
I think it does, because you can tell the difference when you, at least I can sometimes tell the difference, even though I get caught by the words, that something sinks inside that
maybe there's the hope that the awareness grows or something.
Yes.
But I don't want to fall in, you know, I've seen people that fall into the trap of that pretending.
Yes.
Passive mode.
Right.
And confusing that with the new mind.
Right.
The new state that the teachings are trying to turn us to.
Exactly. Mustang says that in here somewhere. It doesn't mean being passive. It means being actively undriven by the old mind, something like that. but there's, it's hard to talk about. But it's hard to say. But you're absolutely right. It, yeah. Yeah, the important thing is not to be caught by this stuff, but to make good use of it if you can. And let it go when you need to let it go. Thank you, that was very helpful and important. It's tricky. It's tricky.
It's still at the end, the mountains are mountains. And, oh, I mean, like, I was is that a poem or, you know, like...
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's time to go.